New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Good morning and welcome to episode 83 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name is Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host John Shipley. John, the Jags are 1-0 in their last game. They've successfully stacked a win, a little Peterson coach speak for you. And now the playoffs are, I mean, their goals have been in front of them the whole season, as Peterson would tell you. But it feels a little bit different this week coming off a win, doesn't it?
Oh, it definitely does. And I've gotten a ton of replies. Like, people say it's just the Panthers, etc. And I understand that. But I don't think anybody is saying that all the Jaguars' problems are fixed because they beat a horrible Panthers team that is bad on the field, bad off the field. With Davis Tepper had their best throw today, you know, the most accurate one, at least.
Right.
Nobody is saying that all their problems are fixed. I thought Doug hit the nail on the head yesterday where he said, this was Doug Peterson yesterday. He was like, it's what we needed. We need something to go right for us. And it did. And that's literally why winning was important. You know, it doesn't matter if they win against the Panthers, if they win against the Oak Leaf Junior High Yellow Jackets, it doesn't matter. Like, they just needed things to stop going terrible for them, which they finally did. And, you know, the Carolina Panthers, David Tepper, Bryce Young was exactly what the doctor ordered for the Jaguars. They evidently cure all ailments unless you're the Atlanta Falcons or Joe Barry. So they needed that one. It doesn't matter who it was against. They needed that one.
I was going to say, like, I think the Joe Barry argument is kind of settled now. And arguably the Mike Caldwell one is like a well-coordinated team is going to make Bryce Young look like what he looks like on Sunday. But yeah, winning fixes everything. Definitely the vibes are, no matter how you do it, no matter who's behind center, if you win, the vibes are all around a lot better. And so I think they definitely did need that win just to kind of like get some weight off of their shoulders and play a little bit more stress-free. Josh Allen was talking after the game about how he was like thinking a little bit too much about the single season sack record. And that's what he shouldn't have done. And he should have been playing free. And he kept repeating the word free, which I thought was a good quote. And like, I mean, that's just football in general, where you got to play fast and play with your instincts rather than thinking too much. Like, I feel like the best example of that is Devin Lloyd's rookie season. So they played free. They played fast. They played the Carolina Panthers and came out with a win.
Josh Allen said after the game that he thought it was by far the best week of prep that they've had. And the responses to it made me laugh. Like, one person was like, what the hell were you guys doing the rest of the season? And two, it was like, was it the best week of prep that you had, or was it specifically because you prepped for the Carolina Panthers that it just looks like it? But, you know, for whatever reason, Trevor Lawrence doesn't practice. The Jags have their best week of practice of the season. You tell me, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
It makes a man think, that's for sure.
Simply don't turn the ball over and take sacks and play the Carolina Panthers and the offense looks better. Mm-hmm. We'll start off with the offense. Gus, it felt like a lot of people were victory lapping, at least in my mentions about C.J. Beathard's game. I want to make a few things clear on just my stance. C.J. Beathard and the offense did better than I thought they would, even against a really bad Panthers team. I didn't think they had 26 points in them just because the state of the offensive line, they're already missing Christian Kirk and Zay Jones going into the game. Then they lost Jamal Agnew pretty early. The running game has been bad. The running game was still bad on Sunday. They just had a 62-yard touchdown run kind of skew things. And
right.
So I think Beathard did better than I thought he would. But I also don't think anybody saying this is the formula they need to follow for Trevor, et cetera, is right. They were playing the worst team in the league, man.
Right.
The Panthers had 7 first downs. I could manage a game if the opposing offense is getting 7 first downs, realistically. Like, am I wrong for thinking that?
No. I mean, the Jags did what they were supposed to do, but I was thinking the exact same thing, where they're about to get to the playoffs, and really this Week 18 game in Tennessee is essentially a playoff game for the Jaguars. And, like, it was good that they did what they needed to do to get a win against an inferior opponent, but that's not going to work against non-inferior opponents when you're playing against teams that are as good or better than you in the postseason. It's definitely – you're going to have to let it rip a little bit more for sure. So that's why Trevor coming back is obviously a necessity.
Exactly. And, like, you know, from Sports Info Solutions, the intended air yards that – the Jaguars had on Sunday. So this is like legitimately just as far as the ball traveled when Beathard threw it, whether it was a completion, incompletion, whatever, ranked 17th out of 17 Jaguars quarterback performances this year at 137. So like the, other than the one throw to Jamal Agnew, like the well-designed play action shot, they literally were not trying to push the ball downfield at all. He completed 2 passes over 10 yards. I think they attempted 6 passes over 10 yards.
I think they could have attempted 4 by my measurements.
Like, it was very
4 to 6, so call it 5.
Yeah, let's call it 5. Like, it was very clear that their entire game plan was don't turn the ball over and shoot yourself in the foot, and we should, you know, the win should come. And it's easier not to turn the ball over when – you know, you're not slinging the ball downfield. Like, for context, Trevor Lawrence's last couple games, his 3 pick game against the Browns, he had 471 intended air yards. Against the Bucks, he had 302 intended air yards. Against the Ravens, 383. Bengals, 348. Like, their 4 highest intended air yard games were their 4 losses. Like, that 4-game losing streak. And that's because they were having to, you know, air it out. They were having to try to take deep shots downfield to get back into these games. But when you play a team with an inept offense, you don't have to do that. You can play a small ball. You can bunt. You can hit like infield singles, which is what they did, you know? So I credit Beathard for that. Like, he had a very backup quarterbacky game, which, you know, I give him credit for executing that game plan. The Jaguars offensive staff obviously came with a good game plan. The other thing I will say, it's been funny. Like, the one thing I think you can say he did better than Lawrence was, it's such a backhanded compliment, he is better at getting sacked and not fumbling the ball than Lawrence is. So I'll give him that. He's better at getting sacked than Lawrence is. I've had several people like you know, that's been their biggest takeaway is, oh, he's not turning the ball over when he's getting sacked. Well, the difference with Beathard and Lawrence is Beathard, it's so much easier to sack him. You know, like, you're also – it's so much easier to force a turnover when a guy knows he can keep a play alive and potentially make a play. Right. If you want Lawrence to play like Beathard, yeah, that probably takes away a lot of turnovers. How many touchdowns does that take away from them this year? How many big plays, you know, does that take away from them this year? The Falcons game, that touchdown to Ridley.
Right.
If he was C.J. Beathard
– fine for me.
Yeah, exactly. If he was C.J. Beathard, that's a sack. So, it's a double-edged sword. Live by the sword, die by the sword. But I thought Beathard – played his part well, but I think the biggest factor in this game was that the Panthers are just that bad, and the Panthers' offense is so bad that, like, what, the game was 9-0 at halftime, right?
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's a good point that, like, the Panthers' offense being bad actually, like, helped the Jags' offense because, I mean, the Panthers had a pretty long opening drive, but the Jags were really in a positive game script for the whole time. The Panthers also punted, or they had 6 straight 3-and-outs, which is ridiculous. I don't really know, like, how to look that up, but I imagine that's only happened a small handful of times this season, if at all, for, like, any NFL team. And so Carolina's defense was on the field a lot, and they were playing from behind a lot. And so CJ really just had to not turn the ball over and hit a couple of throws. There was a few throws that, like, you could tell he was really trying to get the completion and nothing more. On, like, on the first drive, there was a, like, quick game concept and an out route to Agnew for, like, 7 or 10 yards or something. And Agnew had to really come back for it and basically, like, drag his toes on the sidelines, even though, even honestly, if it was, like, a perfectly placed ball, Agnew might have been able to catch it and turn up field a little bit. But then even on, like, the really big play to Agnew, I, like, some people were saying it was the best deep throw by any Jags quarterback all season, which is crazy because Lawrence hit a deep shot to Agnew literally 3 weeks ago, and he scored against the Ravens. And Agnew didn't score. Not only did he not score, but he injured himself because Beathard's throw to him on Sunday was so underthrown. And for the point being that, like, CJ was really just trying to get the completion and kind of move the sticks. But, like, he kind of knew what his job was, and he did his job well. And, like, it goes back to the same thing with the sacks. Like, he knows his job is, like, not to, like, make a play and put the team on his back, but to just, like, not hinder the team at all. And it's kind of the opposite of for Lawrence, where, like, he feels like he needs to put the team on his back at times. And so that is the biggest thing leading to all of, like, these fumbles and turnovers. So, yeah, I also would give – I mean, I was going to say credit. I don't think the Jags coaching staff really deserves credit for sticking to the run game when they were winning the entire ball game. But, like, you saw the benefits of sticking to the run game even when it doesn't happen, because I feel like the Jags had, like – pretty much unsuccessful runs on every single attempt except for the Travis Etienne 62-yard touchdown. But, like, you got to keep running the ball to, like, give Travis Etienne a chance to make a play like that. You can't just, like, run him 5 times and gain 7 yards and then shelf him for the rest of the game. Like, you got to continue to put the ball into a player like his hands. And so it was nice to see that happen, even though, similar to Beathard, like, it was just what should have happened.
Yeah, no, I thought that was a great example, like you said, of sticking to the running game. Like, eventually, something's going to break,
right?
You know, like, one way or another. And I think we both predicted leading up to the game that they would have trouble running at some. Like, Derrick Brown, before Cam Robinson threw his helmet into the bud zone, I mean, Derrick Brown was all over the place, dude. Yeah, he was absolutely phenomenal. But like you said, you know, you saw the advantage of what happens when you actually stick the run game. Etienne had 16 carries. I think Bigsby had 10, which is a career high. He played a career high in snaps. I believe it was a career high in rushing yardage, 10 carries for 32 yards. I do think that his numbers get dinged a little bit by some clearly poor blocking on a couple plays where he lost like 3 yards, I think, on 2 different occasions. So his numbers look a little bit better than that. He had a career long 12-yard carry. It obviously wasn't any game that I think you can say, oh, they figured out. Yeah, I know. Career long 12-yard carry. Yeah.
The way you snuck that in got me. That was really good.
I wasn't trying to be sarcastic. It was good hell.
I know. But like you trying not to be sarcastic is like what made it so good. It's because like it was already going to be funny. And then you not trying to make it funny made it funnier. Anyway.
Okay, the balky ball of the week. Does Strange have a catch longer than 12 yards? Because there's a very real chance that their longest play from their day 2 picks is a 12-yard carry in the fourth quarter against the Bengals. Okay.
I Strange think he had a seven. Pretty nice screen against the Colts in week 6.
Yeah, 17-yard catch. So 17-yard catch and a 12-yard run are the 2 biggest plays from day 2. Yeah. Nonetheless, I thought Tank looked, I'm not gonna say good. I thought he looked better than he normally looks. Like he forced 3 missed tackles, which, you know, per PFF, which, and you saw a couple of them. Like, you made one guy, I think it was actually Brown, missing the hole, where you saw some glimpses of something. Not enough to take back any of the correct things that we've said about the pick, but just in terms of his actual value as a player moving forward. You probably saw a little bit more this week than you have in past weeks, which, again, I know the Panthers are terrible, but knowing that the running game wasn't really there in general, I think that says something. I think they got all 3 running backs a carry on that first drive that they had. So,
yeah,
it was obvious that they were trying. Like, that was their game plan. So, I don't want to say anything with the running game was fixed this week, but maybe it was good for Press Taylor, you know, just – literally having a backup quarterback there, so he had to run the ball. So, you know, he could see some of the things that can come off it. Because I agree, that ETN run, his touchdown, I thought was a direct result of sticking with the run. I also thought it was ETN's best run in the NFL. Like, I feel like we've seen a lot of those plays where he'll make guys miss, you know, and then when he gets to the sideline, he'll maybe get forced out, or he doesn't end up scoring. The fact that he kept his balance, you know, with a ton of contact with somehow a Panthers player like semi-tackled Parker Washington, so he had to also avoid Parker Washington on the sideline. Right. I thought it was his best run of his career. Like, it was very fitting the week that Fred Taylor got his nod to the Hall of Fame. That was like the most Fred Taylor-like run that I think you've seen ETN have.
Yeah, it's been cool to see all of the Fred Taylor highlights on the timeline since he was announced as a finalist for the Hall of Fame. I think I saw a stat that Tank had 32 rushing yards on Sunday, and 29 of them came after contact. Just to back up what you said about how, I mean, this game, but really the whole season, he hasn't really had a lot of room to operate. So it was definitely nice seeing him get double digit touches. I'm continuing to be wrong on the Tank tracker of guessing how involved he will be, but it was definitely a good sign to see him like getting involved. Cause I almost think that, like, obviously the Jags want him to be a contributor for this year's team, but he is a first year player and still has his whole career in front of him. And so I think kind of similar to how we were talking about, like, Ezra Cleveland is almost doing like a little bit of a tryout for the Jaguars for the rest of the season. Like, it's almost a tryout for Tank to know, like, whether the Jags can trust him to be like their true number two back going into next year, or if they're going to have to make yet another, some kind of commitment to a running back, whether it's in the draft or signing a veteran. Cause I'm all for signing a veteran, like a Deontay Foreman or a Zeke Elliott. Like, even who's the guy on the Bills right now? Latavius Murray, like, just like some vet guy for like $4 million who you can like really trust to pick up 2 yards and like pick up a block on a blitz, and just like a 1 year contract just to get some kind of like trust in that room. But hopefully Tank will build up enough trust like through the rest of this season to be able to like really have his spot as RB2 rather than RB3 going into the next season.
Would you bring back D'Ernest Johnson?
I mean, yeah, but to be more like for the same reason that he was brought in this year, which is to be more of a special teams player than backup running back. Because I'll like, they're gonna either re-sign D'Ernest or sign like a veteran running back like D'Ernest to be essentially a special teams player. But I wouldn't mind seeing them sign someone like Deontay Foreman, who I think has bounced around the league for a few years, partly because he's more of like a backup running back, and that's his role. Yeah. I do a lot on special teams.
I do think they need a pass blocker at the position for sure. Like right now, like that's D'Ernest's niche right now. Like, he's by far the best pass protector. I mean, ETN, like great run, had a brutal day in pass protection against the Panthers. He gave up one sack, another pressure on another one. Bigsby, I don't even think they trust to be on the field on a passing down right now. So they definitely do. Yeah, so they definitely do need, like, right now, D'Ernest is the pass pro guy. They definitely do need to fill that role in the offseason. Gus, I want you real quick to go ahead and open your Twitter app and look at the video I sent you.
The old bird app.
Yeah, I'm not gonna call it. Not gonna call it X. What is it? Somebody had the end zone angle of ETN's touchdown run. Watch it and tell me. He doesn't have the most hilarious running style in the NFL.
He's got that weird thing with his feet. I have no idea what it's called. We need some doctor to come in to tell us what's actually like the way he. I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, it does look like a duck, but like his. I don't even.
Somebody said ETN runs like a duck, but that duck is fast as fuck. I don't know. Yeah, like, when I'm watching it from that angle, I'm like, how is he outrunning anybody?
He's got this weird thing with his like feet where he like, instead of like planting his whole foot, he just plants like the inside of his feet basically, or something weird like that. I remember there was when I was a student at Florida and going to basketball games, I forget who the player was. It was a big man who would like just like play on his tippy toes the entire game. I have never seen anything like it, but he was just always on his tippy toes, even when like nothing was happening during the game. And so Etienne has that weird athlete thing where like he just like kind of like moves. He literally moves differently than people.
He does. It's I've always noticed it. I feel like a lot of people have, but it really became apparent when I saw that video. In terms of the pass catchers from Sunday, I think Evan Engram deserves a ton of credit for, like, regardless of how it happened, like, and regardless of his usage, obviously the crazy first down stat that we talked about last week, 100 catches for a tight end is 100 catches. Like, it's impressive, you know? So, especially for a guy who was knocked for his consistency as a pass catcher coming, like, into his tenure with the Jaguars after the Giants, to me, that's, like, the perfect way to kind of, you know, perfect full circle for him after leaving the Giants is, you know, he came to Jacksonville as a bust who people thought had drops issues, and now he's one of the most utilized tight ends in NFL history. I thought he had a great game on Sunday. Like, people got mad at me on Sunday for saying I thought the pass catchers were playing out of their mind. They were. I'm sorry, dude. They made some great catches. I thought some really aggressive catches on, like, his first down. I think it was their second longest pass play of the game. It was on third down where he took, like, a slant, like, 20-something yards. Etienne had a really nice play in terms of yards after the catch. Ridley had, I think, his first yards after the catch since, like, October on one play. I thought, like, it makes no sense. The first game that they don't have their star quarterback, the pass catchers, like, elevate their game. And maybe they do that because they know they don't have the quarterback, but it's odd to see them do some of the things that they did when they weren't doing them, you know, the weeks before. But I thought in general, it was like, just like looking strictly at the skill players, I thought it was one of their best games of the year. Like, there was nobody, like no mistake from a skill player I can really remember off the top of my head. And they've had some glaring ones in the last couple of weeks. Now, it probably helps that, you know, Tim Jones, Elijah Cooks, and Parker Washington saw like two targets all game for 2 yards, I believe.
Yeah.
Add in Britton Strange, and I think that's 6 targets for 3 yards among those 4 players. So it definitely helps that they weren't targeting those guys as much. But I thought the pass catchers had an impressive game, which again, against a really bad secondary, Shaq Griffin is somehow starting after getting there like 2 weeks ago. CJ Henderson was a healthy scratch. Were you moved at all by the pass catchers, or was it just a who cares kind of game from you?
I wasn't that moved. Like, I definitely agree with you where I thought it was a nice game. Like, I feel like the biggest mistakes that came were Parker Washington run blocking reps, including the ETN one where he was just – it's not even his fault either. Like, he's a pretty small guy, and they were asking him to, like, be, like, on the line blocking players. There was one play in the red zone. Go ahead.
Did you see in the video where he like gets thrown in front of ETN? ETN has to drop him.
There was another run in the red zone. I think it was like the D'Ernest Johnson carry on the first drive where Parker is like basically lined up as an inline tight end almost, where he's just like, or he's a wide receiver, but like on the line of scrimmage. And he's asked to, I don't know what he's asked to do, but he's essentially ends up getting tasked with blocking 2 different Panthers defensive lineman, and it goes not very well. So like that was like the only, and that, like that's something that like we can kind of like laugh at. And again, it's like not really Parker Washington's fault because like he got like thrust into that role because of injuries to be expected to like handle the types of blocks that like they would want Zay Jones to make. So I thought like Ridley definitely stepped up and had a fairly clean game. Agnew stepped up until he unfortunately broke his ankle. Is that what the injury is?
I think it's a broken leg. Mark Long had the Jags beat tweet of the year. Jamal Agnew's out for the season, like parentheses, broken bone.
Broken bone. Is that the tweet of 2024 or the tweet of 2023?
I think it happened yesterday. So, tweet of 24.
All right.
Tweet of 24. Yeah. So,
good early front runner.
That's a legit loss for them right now, right? No, Agnew, because he was like a black hole of the offense, like the first half of the season, where like he was turning it over at a crazy clip. That even dates back to last season, you know. But since he's come back, their two biggest plays through the air since he's been back are both to him. And two of the three biggest plays in general, it's, you know, his catch against the Ravens, ETN's run, and then his catch against the Panthers. I think just like with their lack of speed at receiver right now and with the injuries, I think he's a legitimate loss. And that doesn't even talk about the loss in special teams, because it's clear him and Parker Washington are in like two different universes as return men.
Yeah, we've talked before about how like Agnew provides a spark to the special teams, but he definitely provides a spark for special teams and the offense. And so similar to like going back to the well with ETN and just kind of like giving him touches because he's got a play inside of him, like that's kind of the same thing with Agnew. And so it's definitely pretty tough that they lost one of their biggest playmakers, especially when like their best receiver and Christian Kirk is currently out right now. But where do you see Kirk's timeline at? Do you think he's got, like, do you think, like, we should even talk about him being able to play in Week 18, or do you think it's a postseason discussion?
It feels crazy to think that he could play in Week 18, but I don't know, man. This is a team where it seems like that kind of goes their way sometimes with anybody other than, like, Zay Jones this year. Like, they're just getting guys back at, like, a quick clip this year, you know? Like,
right.
They're getting guys back sooner, so I don't know. Let's table that for later in the week. We'll see if he is on the practice field this week, if his window gets open tomorrow, etc. Because you do run the risk of opening a window, and then if you don't activate them in that 21-day period, they revert back to IR. Like Christian Braswell, he's on IR for the rest of the year because he didn't get activated off his 21-day window. 21 days came and went. He wasn't activated, so he's done. You know, you don't want that to happen to Kirk. I don't think so. Well, when he does get activated, that will tell you that he's pretty close. Maybe not Sunday close, but relatively close. So it'd be huge for them. Like, there's no doubt about that. It'd be huge. And he's obviously, you know, you see on social media, he's attacked rehab, you know, since he went down. I think specifically so he could be back for like a late season kind of push. So I don't know. We'll see later in the week.
Yeah, I think they'll be able to – they definitely could win at Tennessee without him, but I think there's no way they're able to reach the Super Bowl without him. So definitely be interested to see if slash when he's able to return.
Maybe the results are different against the Browns and Ravens if he plays. I don't think the results are different versus the Buccaneers because the entire team was terrible. And the Bengals, they should have beat them regardless. Like that was a defensive loss. That wasn't because they didn't have Christian Kirk.
I think for the Ravens game, maybe that's fair. And like the Ravens defense is extremely legit, but like the Jags defense was actually doing a really good job against Lamar Jackson and the Ravens in that game. So like maybe if they had just like a little bit more juice on offense, they could have snuck a victory. But like against the Browns, like, yeah, he would have been a positive impact and maybe the Jags would be able to sneak out a win, but like I feel like the biggest issue in that game was like definitely their offense was an issue, but they let Joe Flacco put up over 30 points, and like Christian Kirk isn't going to do anything about that. So
that's fair. I'm more looking at how disastrous of a game that was for Zay Jones and Calvin Ridley, and how they didn't really have anybody else to get the ball to. But I can see that point as well. And hey, you know, maybe they beat Tennessee, they get another crack at Cleveland. Gus, you have anything else on the offense, my friend?
No, I don't.
Okay. That was good. That was good. Right. We'll be right back after this break, talk about the defense. All right, Gus. We did it.
We did it.
We escaped the freezing cold takes that is Bryce Young fans. Thank God, honestly. I would have been fighting for my life online if Bryce Young had even a competent game. But thankfully for me, my mental health, all of my loved ones who worry about me every time I fight strangers online about things that aren't anywhere near important.
Right.
That didn't happen. Bryce Young looked absolutely terrible. He stinks, Gus. He stinks.
Oh, man, it was rough. We were talking before this, and I said I feel like Ritter was easily the worst quarterback that the Jags have faced this season. Like, just didn't even look like an NFL quarterback. And then they've played Bryce Young. And, like, I just feel so bad, which maybe I shouldn't feel so bad, but maybe it's just because, like, Bryce seems like a nice kid, and maybe he only seems like I'm sure he actually is nice, but he only seems super nice because of his height. But, like, he just seemed, like, hopeless back there. And it was, like, the type of hopeless where, like, it's on the quarterback. Like, obviously, he was not drafted into a good environment whatsoever. But I remember during Trevor's rookie season, like, he was – the story of the season, I felt like, was he was, like, trying to see, like, what he could and couldn't get away with. And there was a lot of interceptions and just a lot of turnovers in general. But, like, you weren't really putting too much blame on Trevor, or you shouldn't have, because, like, the offense around him was brutal, and, like, he was just, like, trying to do anything he could to get a win. And, like, Bryce, like there was none of that. Even when they were losing, it's like you can't even, like, see, like, where the ceiling is, or, like, see, like, where he's trying to, like, get a win. It just looks bad all around. It's like, that's not an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, no. I had a buddy who was in the end zone seats during the game. Except when the ball got snapped, you would lose him.
Dude, it's the back. Like, he was over in, like, the first or second drive of the game. I'm pretty sure it was the first. I saw Bryce Young jumping up and down multiple times to read Jacksonville's, like, defensive alignment from the pocket. Like, so they were, like, lined up. He was in shotgun a few seconds away from snapping the ball and just jumping up and down. I was like, this is so dumb. That's why I feel bad for him, because it's just sad.
And like you said, Carolina had a decent-ish first drive against the Jaguars. Like, they get points out of it if their kicker, like, isn't hurt. But still, like, I think his highest, like, air yards of, like, any of those passes was, like, 6 yards in the first drive. The most impressive play was, like, on that fourth down, where Thielen picked up 14, where Thielen just wasn't covered. And it was really only impressive because he got the ball out quickly against the blitz. Like, I feel like quarterbacks the Jaguars have played this year, and from SIS, the quarterbacks with the worst EPA per plays against the Jaguars this year, it goes Desmond Ridder, who technically cost the Falcons 20 points in that game. That's absolutely insane. So it goes Ridder, then Bryce Young, then Gardner Minshew, then Kenny Pickett, then Joe Flacco. And I feel like that's pretty accurate, like, for ranking in terms of the quality of quarterbacks that they face this year. Like, I know everybody is all in on, you know, Flacco being epic and, you know, like, stuff like that. But objectively, he's one of the worst quarterbacks they've played this year, and Bryce was worse than him. Just from my view on Sunday, I think he Desmond Ridder, I'd probably take Bryce Young over Kenny Pickett and Desmond Ridder, but that's probably about it out of the quarterbacks the Jags have played this year, which the Jags defense finally got back on track this week. But I do think things like a linebacker being the Panthers kicker, to the Eddie Pinero having a hamstring injury and playing, you know, I don't want to call him a cosplay quarterback, but it's nearing those levels. I think that has more to do with it than the Jaguars actually fixing anything. What, like, you would say that, right? Like, I didn't come away from that game thinking the Jaguars fixed any of their defensive issues. They were just facing an absolutely abhorrent offense.
Yeah, I think that's mostly true. But, like, we also, like, just kept expecting a rebound for so many weeks. Obviously, they played Lamar Jackson in a really hot Ravens offense, but they played Jake Browning and Joe Flacco and Baker Mayfield. And even though those offenses are pretty well orchestrated, like, you think just because of the name, the Jackson would be able to take advantage, and they really didn't at all. And, like, this is the first time that they, like, took advantage of a good opportunity in front of them. And I think it was, as you're saying, like, mostly because of the opportunity and mostly because they were playing Bryce Young. But, like, I still saw, like, encouraging signs from, like, everywhere in the defense. I think, like, the linebacker play has been, like, the biggest swing in terms of, like, performances for the defense, where, like, obviously said this before, where like there's been injuries to the secondary and the defensive line groups, but like the whenever the linebackers play really poorly or really well, then like it feels like the whole defense kind of reflects that. And I thought the linebackers play well on Sunday. Devin Lloyd continues to get better. And then like perhaps more encouraging was like players returning from injuries, especially Tyson Campbell, who looked really good. And then Andre Sisco too was like rotating snaps with Andrew Wingard, but it was like part of a load management plan. And I mean, I think part of the reason like Bryce Young was 1 for 9 with an interception on passes over 10 yards downfield. And I think the main reason is that it's Bryce Young, but like another reason is that Andre Sisco and Tyson Campbell looked a little bit more like they did to start the season. And so again, I think it was more opportunity than anything else, but I was encouraged by a couple of specific performances.
The Jags had the best defense in terms of EPA per play this week and the second best defense in terms of success rate, which considering where the Jaguars are at, like entering this week, feels wild. I will say, I thought the Jaguars would play to run better. Like they were like 14th in EPA per play against the run, 17th in success rate against the run this week. They didn't give up a carry longer than 7 yards, but it did feel like Chuba Hubbard, you know, averaged 4.1 yards per carry. Miles Sanders only got 2 carries of 10 yards. It did feel like the run defense was maybe a little more open than you would think in a rebound game, but the Panthers couldn't take advantage of it because their drop back passing game was terrible. Does that make sense? And the game obviously got away from them. I guess what my real point is that I feel like they got kind of lucky in a sense that they were playing such a bad passing game, because this game did not make me think their run game issues were fixed. Though I would also say it felt like the Panthers went basically 11 personnel all game, which you know I've talked about on the show before. The Jaguars just aren't built to stop the run when they're in like their 2-4-5 look.
Yeah. Sorry, hold on one sec.
You got balky ball, buddy. Yeah.
He's coming. I got to blow my nose real quick.
Okay. Well, while Gus is gone. That's the ultimate balky ball. No, the ultimate balky ball is me remembering that we now have a pause button, but me not hitting it.
That's why I was like, because that's happened before. Anyway.
That's my bad. What was the question? That's my bad. I was mid-take. I can't be expected to run a show mid-take. My question was, my take is the Jaguars defense got a little bit lucky drawing such a bad passing game this week, because I did not come away thinking the run defense was fixed. I was still kind of
I agree. I think like if you look at the box score for both the Jags offense and defense, and like you think, oh, they had a pretty good day for run offense and run defense, but like really it was just that game script helped them out so much. And because they were winning the whole game, like they were able to continue running and Carolina wasn't really able to continue running. But I'm right there with you where I was like a little bit underwhelmed by the run defense, because I was expecting them to be really stout on first and second down against the run, and then Bryce Young would just be in hell on 3rd and 9 dropbacks the whole game. And then it turned out he was just in hell on 3rd and 5 dropbacks the whole game.
He's just in hell.
But, I mean, again, the Jags forced 6 straight 3-and-outs, which is just so crazy. And so, like, yeah, like their run game was a little bit underwhelming, but at the same time, like the run game wasn't bad. And they still kind of similar to like Press Taylor and the Jacksonville's offensive coaching staff, like kind of sort of getting credit for their run game. Like they still got the job done on defense.
I look at it, those 6 straight 3-and-outs, the Panthers had a net gain of 0 yards on those 6 drives. That's crazy, dude. What are they doing? Like, what are they doing there? Like, I agree with you. I do feel bad for Bryce Young, because he doesn't seem like a tool, like some other highly drafted quarterback bust who – I almost said something that might get me canceled. Who went to BYU in recent years? He doesn't seem like a tool like that. So right. I do feel bad to him to that extent. But when you watch the Jaguars defense, just I think Ben Solak had the best tweet for it. He like tweeted out that he was like, they gave up 34 points against the Bengals, 31 points against the Browns, 23 points against the Ravens, 30 points against the Bucks, and then they shut out the Panthers. Like, it just felt like to me it was very much more so a Panthers debacle than anything else. So I am holding my breath on the defense being back until they play a quarterback who's allowed to, you know, ride most roller coasters in the continental U.S. Though, I will say, I like one like cool kind of like, it's not even enough to be a subplot. It's like the subplot of a subplot has been Mike Caldwell's kind of evolution of the nickel position. You know,
yeah, like, I forgot to mention Antonio Johnson when I was going over like impressive individual performances earlier, but that's definitely one worth saying.
And I thought you hit the nail on the head with yours. You know, I thought Tyson Campbell, super physical game. He had a great rep on DJ Chark on the sideline. I saw Panthers fans killing Chark for not catching it. It was just a great play by Campbell. Campbell would have gave up a touchdown to Chark if Bryce Young, like the play that Doug Peterson challenged that Chark didn't catch. Yeah. Like a good throw, and that's a touchdown. You know, he doesn't have to dive. You're just leading him into the end zone. I thought that was the only negative play from Campbell. He was really physical. That tackle, like, for loss that he had, like, it's been a funny thing to note. Like, when Darius Williams is tackling, that's when you know the Jaguars are physical like that day. You know, like, you can just tell, you know, what kind of day it is. I think Caldwell is, like, his usage of the nickel position has been super interesting. Like, he literally has a rundown nickel and a passing down nickel. How many defenses do that, dude? It kicks ass.
Any off the top of my head, I don't know.
Yeah, so I think Trey Herndon. So Antonio Johnson played like all but 17 snaps. Trey Herndon played 16 snaps. So it's very easy to see who was on the field when Antonio Johnson wasn't. Antonio Johnson was playing, you know, the early downs, the base downs, first and second. And then you'd see Trey Herndon rotate with him on third and fourth down. I think it's a brilliant plan by Caldwell because it's a way to get a playmaker on the field. Because, yeah, context is needed for Antonio Johnson's three takeaways. One came on a Hail Mary at the end of a game, and one came on a tipped overthrown pass. But plays a place, you know, like that. And just the residual effect like that they have across the defense, a turnover is a turnover. You know, I'm not going to nitpick how a guy gets it. So I think it's a great way for Caldwell to get a playmaker and a young guy who needs more snaps on the field while also playing to their strengths and weaknesses. Because, I mean, it's clear right now that Ann Johnson, you know, really good blitzer, really good tackler. I think he has one missed tackle all season, is really good on those early downs. But when you get the third down, it's clear that you need a guy to win and like one-on-one coverage. Herndon's probably your best bet right now. Like he's just a better fit against slot receivers than Johnson. I still think Johnson's a safety who right now is playing in the slot.
Yeah.
I've been really impressed by how Caldwell's used those two.
Yeah. For your Herndon coverage point, there was a play where Amir Smith Marset created like 6 yards of separation against Johnson on an out route. When it was like Johnson was guarding him from the slot, man on man coverage. And like, I didn't even know Amir Smith Marset was on the Panthers currently until that play. But it is definitely seems like a good plan so far. And I think like not just getting a playmaker on the field, but getting an athlete on the field is like kind of like the way they're doing it. Cause I remember when Devin Lloyd and Trayvon Walker were both drafted last year, there was a lot of talk about how Mike Caldwell, cause it was also going into the first year of Mike Caldwell's defense. The first defense he would ever coordinate. So there was a lot of talk about how maybe his vision was kind of like a positionless sport, like kind of like in basketball where you see like different defenders being able to guard like anywhere from 1 to 4 or 1 to 5, as in like point guard to power forward or point guard to center. And like, so like having Trayvon Walker who can line up at outside linebacker or anywhere on the line, hypothetically, and then like Devin Lloyd, who's like an off-ball linebacker, but could also hypothetically like rush from anywhere online. And now you're adding in another athlete who can play coverage. He can fit the run. He can blitz off the edge. And like, I feel like that's kind of the biggest difference between him and Rayshon, who he might be replacing as a starter next season, is that like, you can definitely tell the like see the energy and the physicality that Rayshon brings, but then like he's just going to lose a decent amount of foot races because of just his age and athleticism. And so like having kind of like a splash of youth and a splash of athleticism in Antonio Johnson, I think, has propelled the defense a little bit.
And just having Johnson's like frame and length out there too, I think in the slots, like it can lead to, I think, eventual like turnovers, tip passes and stuff. Like it looks like a vulture out there, you know, like you don't see slots built like him. So
he's tall as crap. It's crazy.
He is. He's tall. He's tall.
You walk around the locker room, and I like forget who he is because I'm like, that's not safety. That's like some guy I haven't seen before.
Yeah. He's, I think he's listed 6'2", but he's basically 6'3". He's really long. I think it's a sign of good coaching that they're figuring out how to get both guys on the field, because some coaching staffs, they could have just said, no, we're putting the rookie on the field. He's going to sink or swim, probably take his lumps. And some coaching staffs would have said, no, we're going to keep the veteran on the field. The rookie's only going to play when there are injuries. I think they found a good way to marry both and, you know, ensure both are on the field. I think it's been a really good mix so far. And also, I don't know, I'm probably biased because I still feel like I'm right in saying that he's not a slot when they're literally taking him off the field on passing down. It just feels like they know he has to be on the field in some capacity.
I also wonder if it's like, maybe I'm like leaning too much into like this tryout bit, but like similar to Ezra, similar to Tank, like he's getting snaps on the field now, mostly to try to win games this season. But like, I think it's also partly to see like what he can bring next season and how he can kind of fit into what their future looks like.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'd be remiss if we went this podcast without talking about Josh and Trayvon. 6 sack performance against a bad Falcons offensive line, obviously, but 5 sacks from Josh Allen and Trayvon Joshua 3. Trayvon was his first 2 sack game of his career. They now, I think, have the most sacks of any edge duo in the NFL, while they also have the highest sack percentage, like percentage of their team sacks. It's like, it's so funny when you look at their sack list. It's like Josh Allen 16.5, Trayvon 9, Will Robson Harris 3.5. Their pass rush is literally them and then me and Gene Fournette in the middle. You know, so I think a lot of credit, obviously, to those two guys. Josh Allen, I don't think he has a prayer to win Defensive Player of the Year, even with a big game against the Titans in Week 18. Like, you look at a lot of, like, odds makers, like Bet Online, he's not even on the board with them. Max Crosby is above the board with them. So it just feels like it's going to be Micah Parsons or Myles Garrett or a much worse TJ Watt award this year. But Josh Allen breaking the sack record. Me personally, like, this is going to be a little bit of a standing on a soapbox. Like I've said before, I could care less like the results of, you know, Jags games. I'm going to be here regardless. I'm going to be firing takes off regardless. I'm going to be arguing my ass off on Twitter regardless. But I like seeing good things happen to good people. And since I started covering the Jaguars in 2019, Josh's rookie year, there has not, in my opinion, been a better Jaguar over the last 5 years. Like a guy who just, you build the franchise around, he can be, you know, one of the faces of your franchise. It's actually important to him. Like Jalen Ramsey is the most talented player I've ever covered, but he doesn't care about the franchise he's playing for. You know, like he's a mercenary. I think Josh Allen cares about being a Jaguar. And when you see good things, I remember the offseason when people were flipping out that he wasn't at voluntary workouts, and it had nothing to do with money or anything. He thought his workout plan and his plan for the offseason would be more advantageous to his goals than being at voluntary workouts, and ends up breaking the sack record. So he was obviously onto something.
Right.
He's had the best season all time of any Jaguars pass rusher. And just for me, like personally, I don't think it could have happened to a better player. So it was a cool moment, I thought, when he broke that record. Just the fact that it happened at home, seeing how genuinely happy the locker room was for him, and seeing how the fans kind of embraced it, I thought it said volumes about Josh Allen, the person, as well as the player, obviously.
Yeah. I thought there was like a billion cool mini moments that came out of that one big moment too. Like, it was definitely really cool seeing how after the sack happened, obviously his teammates all kind of like swarmed around him and to congratulate him. But then there was a standing ovation in the crowd too, which is like, it's really cool to like be in the press box for big plays and to see like a running back, like break a crease and like have daylight to a touchdown. And then seeing like all the hands in the stadium go up is always like probably the coolest part to me of just like covering the team in general, or it's just, maybe not covering the team in general, but of being up in the press box. Like, I love seeing the crowd reaction for big plays for the home team. And so, like, it was really cool seeing the home crowd react to the way they did to, I mean, obviously, like, it was a play that was made on the field, but they weren't cheering, like, for that sack. They were cheering for all the sacks and all the things that Josh Allen has brought. And so, like, I thought also, obviously, like, it was really cool that he did his sack celebration and then Calais Campbell's home run sack celebration right after. And then he said after the game that he like hopes someone else breaks his record eventually, and because that's what records are meant for, which is the correct answer. But he also went on to say like he expects Trayvon Walker to break his record, which was just kind of a cool note. And then the last thing I'll say is that I think I've said before how incredibly cool it is that Trevor Lawrence reps as much Jaguars gear and LaFarve gear and really just like his own team's gear in general, because like you rarely see like a superstar player like rep his team's colors or logo as much as Trevor does. And then Josh Allen, when he came out after the game, like the post game press conference, talked to media, he was wearing a hat and a t-shirt, or a hat and a sweater with like two different local charities on them. And I thought that was just really cool.
Yeah, it funny tidbit from the game. I was going through pictures on the picture service we have, and one of our beloved elderly writers in the press group saw the pictures, and he was looking for Josh Allen doing the Calais celebration. He saw a picture of Josh doing the – have you seen Love Don't Cost a Thing with Nick Cannon, that movie?
No.
Well, that dance that they go like – that's from like that movie. It's a movie from the 2000s with Nick Cannon, and he sees a picture of them doing that, and he was like, "Oh, was that the Calais celebration?" No, it was not. Yeah, it was a good bit. It was a good bit. I thought it said a lot that Josh, in his post game like comments though, went out of his way to thank his teammates. How he said Trayvon would break the record, and then you know, on the Trayvon, 9 sacks. 5.5 sacks, I think, in his last, I want to say, 7 games. Like, he has, I think, only one game in that span where he doesn't have at least half a sack. I do think, like, some context is needed. He's definitely, I think, benefiting from, like, partially luck and partially being an effort player. You know, like, against the Panthers, he had 2 sacks, but he had 3 pressures. So, I'm not going to like nail him for it, because I think last year he wasn't getting sacks or pressures. You know, this year the pressure still isn't there, but he's at the very least generating more impact plays than he did a year ago. You know, so I think definitely a step forward taken. 9 sacks, that's the 12th most in a season in Jaguars franchise history. That's our, I looked yesterday. Yeah. Josh is one of 2, Josh is one of 3 players to ever have like 10 double digit sacks, like multiple double-digit sack seasons. It's him, Calais, and Tony Bracken. So those are the top 6. And then you have Jan, I think, had 12 sacks 1 year. Malik Jackson never had 9 sacks. Dante Fowler never had 9 sacks. You know, Chris Clemens had like 8 sacks in back-to-back years somehow. He never had 9 sacks. And Derek Marks never had 9 sacks. So I think getting 9 sacks is legitimately something worth praising, you know, regardless of whether he hits double digits against the Titans or not. He's still not there as a pass rusher, I think, like per PFF. He out of 125 pass rushers with at least 100 rushes, he's 84th in win rate right now. So I don't want to say he's turned a corner, but he's making more plays than he did a year ago, and that's what they need. You know, that's literally just what Josh Allen needs right now, is somebody other than him who's capable of making a play. So I'm not gonna like slam Aiden Hutchinson fans, despite him having the cringiest sack celebration in NFL history. He's still
pass rush moves are cringy. Just everything about his game is cringy.
His dad calling him Hutch is it's cringy. All of that. Yeah, so I'm not gonna step into the Walker versus Hutchinson battle, but I will say 9 sacks in year 2 for a guy who was deemed a project when you picked him. I'm not gonna say he's there yet. Like, that's my personal stance. He isn't. Like, he hasn't made the leap yet, but he's at least improved, you know, in a sense from a year ago in terms of the amount of plays that he's making.
Yeah, I think the way that you put it last week or the week before was that he hasn't taken a leap, but he has taken a step. And so that's so nice to see. Probably same goes for, like, Devin Lloyd, too, where, like, neither of them are playing, like, borderline pro bowlers or, like, maybe how you would really hope that players selected in the first round would look in their second year, but they're taking steps. They're definitely going in the right direction. And I feel like the whole Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker are like leading the league in sacks for a pass rush duo is like a pretty good sentiment for Josh Allen's defensive player of the year case, where like he's doing like, it's a one man show and he's doing kind of everything by himself, where he's getting some help from Trayvon. But as you're saying, a lot of Trayvon's production, specifically in sacks, is like a lot of like effort stuff and like cleaning stuff up. And like, I feel like Josh Allen might have as many total pressures as the rest of the team combined. And so, I mean, like Myles Garrett was kind of like doing it by himself in Cleveland forever and never won a defensive player of the year. And now that he's actually like gotten more help around him this year, he's probably going to get the award. And so like, no one's going to give it to Josh just for being a one man show and like lifting up the defense with him, but that's kind of been like the story of the season, I feel like, for that side of the ball.
I'm gonna look at that now. I'm not gonna count any defensive backs and stuff. Like Antonio Johnson, I think, had 3 pressures against the Panthers, but they were all on blitzes and stuff. Okay. Josh Allen, okay, you're already wrong, actually.
Quicker than usual.
All right, Josh Allen has 88 pressures this year per PFF NC, and everybody else has, like, Trayvon and Roy together have 97, but 88 versus
do 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 shoo boop ba dot bop bop ba doop boop.
I already messed up the counting. Sorry. I want to know the answer.
We gotta bring back those massive like bulking calculators that we used in middle school and high school.
Okay, so Josh Allen has 88 pressures. The rest of the Jaguars front has 185.
So I was close. Okay, do quarterback knockdowns instead.
Do what?
Quarterback knockdowns.
Damn you, Gus. No. Come on, easy. What do you mean knockdowns? Like what constitutes as a knockdown?
What side are you on right now? Like PFF?
PFF, yeah, and they count half sacks as a full sack, so it looks weird.
Okay, do quarterback hits then if they don't have knockdowns? I think you hit a knockdown is the same thing.
Okay. Gotta help. Yeah. For the record, Josh Allen has 32.23% of their pressures this year. Mm. Okay, so you said quarterback hits?
Yes.
Okay. Well, he has double what Trayvon has.
Okay. Let me see if I can do some research, too, because I think Pro Football Reference has knockdowns.
Okay. So he has – Josh Allen has 16 quarterback hits, and the rest of the front seven – or the rest of the defensive linemen and edge players have 48.
Oh.
Yeah.
Advanced defense.
I think he has 25% of the quarterback hits. Which is
bonkers. Yeah, Josh Allen has 12 knockdowns, and the rest of the team has.
I hate that. I hate knockdowns. I hate. What the hell is a knockdown? I hate that.
A knockdown is when like a quarterback is on the ground, like you get a quarterback on the ground, which is fine. But like you could like dub a quarterback and hit him after he lets go of the ball, and like he's not on the ground, you know.
Is it a more impressive pressure if You land on him?
I don't know. Probably not necessarily. But I think quarterback hits is like probably the best stat, because like people can like rack up, because like a couple years ago, I think everyone kind of accepted that like, oh, sacks can be a little bit fluky, and like pressures is a good way to judge like just total pass rush productivity. Like with pressures, like you can like, I think, get like a lot more of just like effort stats sort of. And so I think quarterback hits is a good in between, where it's like provides enough context that you're not just, oh, look, Trayvon Walker had 9 sacks. He's been having an awesome season. But then like the hits are just a good in between.
Okay.
I've like had this exact same conversation before.
Yeah, no, we have. I see the vision. And that's my thing, is I'm not as moved by Trayvon's 9 sacks as Jags fans. Mm-hmm. But I'm also not willing to completely discredit them. You know what I'm saying? Because
sitting right on the tippy top of the fence. I hear you.
Well, he could have 3.5 sacks.
Yeah. I think it's definitely cool that like Jacksonville's top 2 pass rushers are technically leading the league in sacks, but like I feel like everyone kind of knows that doesn't mean that they're the best pass rush duo in the league. Like they're probably like the 7th best, maybe.
I'll say my official stance is pressures are predictive while sacks are not, you know, and that's my thing. I won't look at Trayvon's sack production this year and think it's predictive for a breakout next year, because I don't think the consistent pass rushing results are there on a snap-to-snap basis yet. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think the real lesson, though, is that you can use whatever stat you want as long as it fits your narrative. Because, like, I'm just thinking about, like, agent versus general manager discussions in terms of, like, making contracts. Because, like say, like, Trayvon was up for an extension, like, say Trayvon was, like, in a contract year right now, then, like, his agent would be like, look, 9 sacks in his second year, like that's comparable to like this Pro Bowl player, this All Pro player, all these great guys that got 9 sacks in their second year. But then like the general manager could be like, I don't know, but he only had this many pressures. So
the counterpoint, the general manager is Trip Baalke. You think he doesn't already know all the names that Trayvon has as many sacks as? I can tell you right now, which boat the Jaguars general manager sits in terms of how impressive this Trayvon season is. And
I'm saying like he's gonna like use sacks for his argument, because so Baalke specifically is saying like my number 1 overall pick is a good player, so he would use analyze the team and actually provide context. That's where we're having this 20-minute discussion of knockdowns.
That's right. On that note, Gus, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to hand out our game balls and any residual hot takes. So we'll be right back after this break. All right, Gus, game balls, hot takes. Yeah. I'm going to start us off. Offensive game ball, Evan Ingram. I thought he had one of his best games of the season. Tough catches, tough yards after the catch. Made tough catches in high leverage situations, like multiple third downs, I believe a fourth down, 100 catch season up there with 7 other of the best tight ends to ever play a game. Evan Ingram, here's your game ball. I'm sure it'll go right in the trophy case next year. 100th catch.
I wonder if he ever got that 100th game ball, because there was like conversations in the locker room after of like he cared mostly about the jersey that he wore during the game, but he didn't secure, or as of an hour after the game, he hadn't secured the specific ball that he got to 100 catches with.
They knew how to get it to him, but I said this is somebody after the game. I was like, if they just gave him any ball, would anybody know?
No. That's what they should do, honestly. Just be like, I like looked really hard for this. Here's the game ball, or here's the ball. Like no one would ever know the difference. Yeah. You could like go back and like check the tape and see like which ball was, but like there's no way to actually know.
I do think it's one of the coolest things in NFL though. When they give out game balls, they literally will like put them in production and like put the players' names and the score and the date on them and give it back to them. It's pretty cool. Offensive game ball, though. Who you got?
I got Travis Etienne. He did not reach 100 catches on the season, but his 62-yard touchdown run got him to 2,000 career rushing yards, which makes him the sixth running back in franchise history to do so, besides after Fred Taylor, MJD, Leonard Fournette, James Robinson. And then there's one other. There's some random guy I've never even heard of, I feel like, who played from like 95 to 99. Do you know who it is off the top of your head?
For
just like Jaguars all-time rushing leaders. James Stewart. Does that name ring a bell? So James Stewart had almost
good old Jimmy Stewart. Yeah, like I was like two when he played, but the name rings a bell.
Yeah. So I mean, 2,000 yards is like not historic or anything, but he got to 2,000 yards. He scored two touchdowns. I feel like this is the first game since before the bye where before the bye, like anyone you would ask would say Travis Etienne is putting the offense on his back, and he did that again on Sunday. And so I thought it was a much needed performance from him specifically.
It was one of just seven running back seasons in Jaguars franchise history with double digit rushing touchdowns. First guy since MJD did it in 2009. MJD did it three times, which is crazy, 06, 08, and 09. Fred Taylor did it twice in 2000 and 1998, and then James Stewart had 13 touchdowns in 1999. So Etienne passed Stacey Mack, Natrone Means, MJD, Stacey Mack again, and Leonard Fournette came into the game with nine touchdowns, passed all of them. It, I mean, just obviously, like, if you look at those seven seasons, he's had, like, the least impressive of the seasons in terms of, like, an efficiency basis. But 11 rushing touchdowns is 11 rushing touchdowns, especially compared to last year where he just didn't find the end zone very often. So I'm with you. Give him some
props. Touchdowns are, in fact, good.
Yeah. Many are actually pushing my glasses up.
Actually, it
was a good bit that Twitter ate itself alive over Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson as MVP candidates, just for Lamar to come out and completely spaz and for Josh Allen to play like the golden retriever he really is. It was a good bit. Lamar Jackson, two-time MVP, NFL Hall of Famer one day, is what it is. Defense, game ball. I'll let you go ahead. So you can go ahead and do the easy one. Yeah, you can go ahead and do the easy one. Go ahead. Come on. Let's hear it.
I thought you letting me go first meant that I was about to give the wrong answer, but I feel like there's only one answer, and it's Josh Allen.
Yeah. Yeah. Trayvon, two sacks. Very impressive. Darius Williams, one catch allowed on four targets for negative 4 yards. Hilarious stat line, but it's got to be 41.
Yeah, I think the only other player I was considering giving it to was Antonio Johnson for the classic Gus Logue. You saw the field. Here's a game ball. But no, it's Josh Allen.
We're past that point with him. That game ball would have been warranted a few weeks ago. You can give that one now to like Tyler Lacey or maybe Jacob Harris this week.
Maybe Caleb on Chase on for all the years of sacrifice, since there won't be many left in town.
Yeah. So special teams game ball.
Teams game ball.
Yeah. I'm gonna go.
Go ahead.
I'm gonna go Caleb Johnson for getting a horse collar tackle on a play where he didn't even touch the horse collar. Dude has a ghost hand.
That's a beautiful thing about football games, is that there's always so many like small weird things that happen that you forget about.
Also, the Panthers linebacker who did a kickoff. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, no, that's the real game ball right there. I'm going with Brandon McManus, though, just because I think, like, confidence is such a big thing for all athletes, but probably especially kickers. And so even though all of his field goals were less than 35 yards, maybe even less than 30 yards, I feel like all of them were just chip shots from pretty much the 10-yard line. But he did go 3 for 3, and so I think that was an encouraging sign. 4 for 4, excuse me. 4 for 4. So yeah, it was nice that he didn't miss any kicks. Similar to like CJ Beathard, where it's like, good job, you didn't mess up. Like, that's the same thing for McManus.
He had a 35-yard field goal, followed by a 26-yard field goal, a 24-yard field goal, and then a 34-yard field goal. So all four 35 yards ashore.
Yeah, I'm not like that upset about the Jaguars not doing that great in the red zone. Because, like, yeah, obviously, like, you want to score more than one touchdown in five red zone trips when we get to the postseason. But, like, for just this game and, like, the way that it was such, like, a get-right game for the Jaguars, I think the fact that they just, like, still came away with points in every red zone trip, like, you can call it a success that way.
Good point. Good point. Gus, you got any hot takes to send us out, my friend?
Yeah, I have one revision. A few months ago, I came on here and said that Justin Fields should be traded to the Falcons. And in Atlanta, he would lead the Falcons to a playoff berth the next season. But I'm altering that. And I still think overall the take is that Justin Fields will lead his new team next season to a playoff berth. But now I want it to be in Miami. I think the Dolphins should trade a second-round pick to the Bears. They have, like, the two fastest receivers in the league. They got the two fastest running backs in the league. Why not get the fastest quarterback in the league?
I hate you. I was literally going to say trade Tua for a ham sandwich and trade for Justin Fields if you're Miami. Neither one of them uses their eyes. So might as well get the one who's built like a tank. Number 40 and 4-5.
Yeah, like, I remember Justin Fields, like, there was a bunch of smoke or whatever you want to call it coming out of Chicago because – he was asked a question after a loss and he like kind of sort of put a lot of blame on coaches. And he was like, I'm thinking too much and I got to go out there and just play, similar to the Josh Allen comments earlier, or that I mentioned earlier about playing free. And so like the Mike McDaniel / Kyle Shanahan offense is like the place to be if you don't want to think as a quarterback. It's like, here's a really, really good skilled wide receiver going across the middle of the field and you're going to huck that thing no matter what. And then, like, get him going on, like, zone reads with Raheem Mostert and what's the running back, the rookie's name?
A chain.
Yeah. Line me up.
Mike McDaniel was clearly in his early Sean McVay era when he was saddled with Jared Goff because he had to be where he will find true enlightenment and happiness when he finds his Matt Stafford.
So, yeah. The Dolphins are like in a similar like win now sort of mode as the Rams were in, because like they made a big trade for Tyreek, they made a big trade for Jalen. Like those two players are like towards the end of their prime, and then they've got Vic Fangio coordinating the defense, and like he's a coach, so maybe he'll stick around for a long time. But he is barely up there in age, so maybe he won't. And so I think like just especially with like Tyreek being towards the end of his career, like the Dolphins can't sit on their hands and like just keep playing Tua. Like, I don't think Tua is terrible, but
he's like, fine.
As you said, it's like the same thing with McVay and Goff. Like, they're going to get to a point, whether it's this season or maybe even next season, where they're like, we've got just like a absolutely capped ceiling with our current quarterback and we need to do better.
And it took the Rams losing the Super Bowl, you know, for that to happen. I'm with you. Like, Tua is fine, but I think enough is enough. Like, people can stop trying to shoehorn him into those like top quarterback talks after the Ravens debacle that they had. Like, he's fine. He's Mike McDaniel's playing quarterback for them by all intents and purposes. You know, for me. I don't think Tua has made a decision on the football field since Brian Flores was the coach. So I'm with you. I'll also change my MVP pick. I said it was CMC, then Lamar / Allen. I think Lamar has jumped both of them. He's got to be MVP, I think. The Ravens is scary, man. The Ravens have put both Kyle Shanahan and Mike McDaniel in a locker, and they have the MVP at quarterback there. And does it say something that the Jaguars played the Ravens better than the Dolphins and 49ers did?
Does it say something that the Jaguars played Lamar Jackson worse than they played Joe Flacco and Jake Browning? It's the NFL. Nothing makes sense. Everything is week to week, and like, it's so random. Nothing makes sense.
I will say, so say the Jaguars win the AFC South, I think it'd be a lock that they would play the Browns.
Yeah. So I think the Browns are officially the 5 seed. I think the Browns are the 5 seed regardless of who this weekend.
So it'd be the Jags versus the Browns, the winner of Miami Buffalo versus either like the Texans, Colts, or the Steelers, and then Kansas City versus the loser of Miami and Buffalo, I believe. So I don't know. There's a chance the Jags could see the Ravens in 2 weeks in Baltimore. So that'd be an interesting game. But we'll get into all the playoff implications, et cetera, when we are back on Friday. Gus, you got anything else for me, my friend?
Last take. I'd rather have Gardner Minshew for the rest of his career than Bryce Young. And I've spewed hatred towards Gardner Minshew for the past – since he was starting in Jacksonville. I'm all the way out on Bryce Young.
Where the hell did that come from?
I thought of it earlier. And then, like, you were talking, so I, like, forgot to say it, but I'm saying it now.
We talked about Bryce Young 45 minutes ago.
This is the hot take part of the show. I want to – people got to watch the whole thing. This is the talk.
You're officially planting your flag on over the next X amount of years, you would take Gardner Minshew over Bryce Young?
Yes. After watching Bryce in person, now that I've seen both quarterbacks in person, but especially after watching Bryce last weekend, I feel pretty good about that one.
Permission to clip that?
Permission to clip.
All right. Thank you. Well, thank you. Thank you guys for listening to episode 83 of the Jaguar Report podcast. 83 episodes, guys. Who would have thought? 83. Who would have thought? So we'll be back on Friday to preview Jaguars versus the Tennessee Titans. Thank you guys, as always, for listening. And don't forget the bulky ball entering the new year.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all new Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.